The following Dharma talk was given at Boundless Way Zen Temple in Worcester, Massachusetts.
The 35th ancestor, Great Master Shito, visited Qingyuan. Qingyuan asked, "Where are you from?" Shito replied, "I come from Caoxi." Qingyuan then raised his hosu and asked, "Does this exist at Caoxi?" Shito answered, "It's not only non-existent at Caoxi, but it doesn't exist in India either." Qingyuan asked him, "You haven't been to India yet, have you?" Shito said, "If I went, it would exist." Qingyuan said, "That's not good enough. Say more." Shito replied, "Master, you should say half of it, and not depend completely on me." Qingyuan said, "I don't refuse to speak to you, but I'm afraid that after this, no one will be deeply awakened." Shito said, "It's not that it will not exist, it's just that no one will be able to express it." Qingyuan hit him with the hosu, and Shito was greatly awakened. So last night, I wasn't able to sleep very much. I think I got about an hour in somewhere. This happens sometimes at Sesshin, as many of you know. And last night, I talked about the Jariki energy that builds in us through days of practice. And sometimes what that does is it interferes with our sleep. Or maybe it was something else causing it, but I know that part of the many karmic causes and conditions that led me to not be able to sleep was knowing that I had to give the talk this morning. And even after all this time, I always wonder, will I have anything to say that will be useful to anybody? And so I think those thoughts were bouncing around in my head. Also, one of the thoughts was, oh no, if I don't sleep, I will be completely incoherent during the talk. A great fear that used to arise a lot more in the past and arose a little bit last night to haunt me. And apparently I'm able to read the koan through, which I think is just a wonderful thing. Because again, who is giving the talk? Who is listening to the talk? Who is the one who has these thoughts, who sleeps or doesn't sleep? This is one of the fundamental questions in Zen, not one to be figured out or determined. I know who I am. My name's Melissa, and I'm 70 years old, and I'm married to David, and blah, blah, blah. It's not like that. We keep the spirit of wondering in this kind of question. Who are you? Where are you from? Where have you come from? What is this? All these different ways of examining the matter, not looking for answers, but looking for something else. And so after a while, I realized I was not going to go unconscious in the middle of the night. And so I picked up the koan. Always a good solution, especially during the sesshin, but I think anytime the words of the Dharma don't require awake or asleep. And I read the koan over and over and over again, and I read Keizan's Taisho about it over and over and over again, and nothing. I had nothing. I just kept going, though. And at some point, I woke up really early, so that's why I think I didn't get a whole lot of sleep. And it started to come to me. I did go back to sleep and get what I decided to label a short nap in before 5. When I woke from that short nap, I woke with a level of eagerness. I want to look into this koan, and I don't know what's going to happen, but I trust that the words of these ancestors will make meaning for me. And little by little, all through the morning, well, they did. And I got even more excited. Excited in picking up a piece of cheese off the snack table. Excited in going into the bathroom and relieving myself. Excited in feeling pain in my knee. A weird kind of excitement, a weird kind of, I don't know how to describe it. I've been saying again and again to many of you in Doksan, you don't have to do all the work. The Dharma is just waiting. It's here all the time. Fields of Buddhas, we say in the Mahayana, in the Great Vehicle. Fields of Buddhas, and the Buddhas are not just human beings, but all things. Eagerly preaching the teachings. And our job is to receive that so it can be in the form of not getting it, being confused, being angry, getting into a tussle with someone or yourself, which is more common, especially during Sesshin when you don't get to talk to many people, so you can find yourself arguing inside. All of the parts of the self are the teachings. I think it was Michael who quoted the teaching about everything being like the thousand grass tips. All of the phenomena of the world are demonstrating this simple, unbelievable teaching. Zen is so simple, but we are human beings and we make everything complicated. It's just the way it is. Little by little, with the fatigue and the long days and the hours of Sesshin, some of that begins to wear away. And just like Jenny's caterpillars, we mush up into our essential elements and then we find that we've become the same person we were, but also very different, with a new view of the way we are in the world and the way human beings are. I don't expect that all of us have turned into moths. I don't know. I've been thinking a lot since Jenny's talk about a poem where there's a beautiful line in the middle of it. When white moths were on the wing and moth-like stars were flickering out. That stayed with me before I rediscovered the koan. The first line of that poem, which was by an Irish poet, William Butler Yeats, is, I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. I went out to the hazel wood because a fire was in my head. That's why I come to Sesshin. This is my hazel wood. This is the place where the fire that's in my head gets a chance to burn and burn and burn and then burn out, or at least get banked down a little bit. I quote Yeats because I want to make clear to everyone that this is not confined to Chinese masters of the 8th, 7th, 6th centuries. Actually, Shito was 8th century, now that I recall that. It's human beingness, and it arises everywhere that anyone has ever touched into the nature of reality as it actually is, beyond all of our constructions and ideas about it. And there were a couple of lines in Keizan's Teisho that really struck me last night, and I checked them out again during walking meditation just to see, yep, still pretty strong. The koan now is beginning to transform and change just like the caterpillars. It's dissolving into its essential elements, at least for me, maybe for you, and I want to share a little bit of what I'm discovering, although I don't really know what I'm going to say about it. I'm going to trust the words of Shito and Qingyuan. And I want to talk about this little dialogue that they have, not as a ping pong game or even a baseball game. It's not a game of any kind. And it's not a back and forth kind of battle. The way I saw it overnight and through the morning is different. As a teacher myself, I decided to identify more strongly with the teacher, with Qingyuan. There is something that arises in teachers, which is the great wish to bring the student who sits before us into alignment with our own heart knowledge. If Qingyuan is like that, and I believe he was, then the whole dialogue changes. It shifts around. We see how all he wants is for Shito to wake up. And remember, this is a person who's pretty young. You know, he had come and started studying with Qingyuan after studying with the sixth ancestor, Qingyuan's teacher, Hui Neng, coming around the age of 13 or 14, and then maybe years of dialogues. The thing that Keizan says is they often engaged in question and answer discussions. That's another way of saying they often engaged in meeting each other using words, and maybe more than words. Maybe a heart-to-heart connection was continuing, and I have to believe that Qingyuan really saw Shito. And he was so generous and kind and kept meeting Shito's confusion, which is of a very particular nature in Zen. Sometimes we call it Zen sickness. It's what happens when people have an opening to emptiness, to the great darkness, to the power of the absolute, and love it so much that we gorge ourselves on it. That's why it's Zen sickness. It's a little bit nauseating when someone is stuck in that place and begins to talk from that place, because it's only part of the whole picture. It's only part of the training. It's an important part, but it's not the whole thing. And Shito keeps demonstrating over and over again his quite developed, at this point, Zen sickness. And sometimes when somebody's in that condition, when I see people in that condition, the only thing for a teacher to do is to wait for them to stub their toe against the form world, and voila. Oh, right, there's also stuff. There's also pots that need to boil, and there's also drums that need to be played. When that starts to happen, then emptiness and form begin to integrate with each other, and we see that the teachings of the Heart Sutra are pretty direct. Form is no other than emptiness. Emptiness is no other than form. And poor Shito is still lost. So he says, in the answer to where are you from? Now, what a weird thing for Qingyuan to say, because they'd already been having all these dialogues. Why would he ask this in this moment? We can only imagine, if we're imagining him as the kind Zen teacher who wants to coax his sick Zen student into full presence. He's wanting him to come forward as himself, which is what we want, what I want. I think I can speak for other people there. And Shito says, I come from Cao Shi, which is a way of saying, you know this, I used to work with Hui Neng. He was my teacher, that's where he lives. Cao Shi, yep, that's where I'm from. I'm coming from there, that's where I had great openings and learned so much, and now I'm with you. Okay, well, yeah. Not such a great answer there, my friend. So the master says, nothing. he just raises his hosu. I decided to bring my hosu in to the zendo this morning. I'm just going to do a little show and tell, so if you want to lift your eyes, here it is. Here's a hosu. I actually hit somebody with it earlier today, and they didn't even notice. It's so soft. But Qingyuan didn't even hit him yet. We know he did it at the end. He raised his hosu. He raised his hosu. He could have raised a spoon or a lamp or anything. But he raised the hosu, so there's many reverberations of the power of this this instrument to represent the Dharma. This is something that Roshis carry. We never carry it. We always carry our kotsus, our smaller sticks. But it felt great to me to carry it around all morning, carry it into the kitchen and carry it around in Kinhin. And very many people noticed. Some people noticed. I saw a couple of people's eyes flicker and go back to Kasu the eyes. No blame there. So he raised his hosu and he said, does this exist at Cao Shi? You know, that's a great question, because how many times, and you know this for yourself and me too, how many times do we come into a meeting with a teacher and start to explain ourselves and tell the whole sad story? We want to talk about our dreams and our encounters with people. And a number of people, maybe, I know this is happening, it happened to me yesterday, are having what we call makyo, where there are colors and lights and the atmosphere starts to thin out. It's the thin places where form and emptiness touch each other, and we go back and forth, and they become very, very real. And yet, bless you, I had one like this yesterday, and it was so enjoyable, but it isn't the thing itself. It's something that happens, and when they happen, we appreciate them and love them, and then we set them aside and go back to our practice. And if you've never had a makyo, you're kind of lucky. If you have had one, you're kind of unlucky. But lucky, unlucky, it just happens. Just like our knees hurt and we get tired and sneezy and coffee. It's just the way it is. Human beings, makyo. Makyo means flowers in the air. Sky flowers. Might sound familiar to some of you. So he says, it's not only non-existent at Cao Shi, this is the response from Shi, but it doesn't exist in India either. Uh-oh, now he's really getting lost. He's making a case for himself as in the emptiness world. Nothing, nothing, nada, nada, nada. It's all empty. Doesn't happen back with my old teacher, Wei Nang. It's not even in India, where Buddha and all the 28 Indians' ancestors are from. It doesn't exist anywhere. Nothing. Nothing. And then Qingyuan asks him this wonderful question. Hey, kid, you haven't been to India, have you? Did you go to India? How do you know this? Where are you coming from? He's cutting right through, slicing right through a kind of, in the Zen sickness, there can be some arrogance. The clinging to emptiness can feel like arrogance. It seems, I know everything now. I've opened. I've had a great enlightenment experience, right? But there are many, many, many enlightenment awakening realizations that precede the final integration of form and emptiness, which is not final, but is an ongoing task for the rest of our lives. You haven't been to India, have you? And then she told, oh, he's still stuck. He says, if I went, it would exist. Oh my goodness. Can you feel it? Can you feel the clinging to the idea of himself as somebody who's accomplished something? I would bring the hosu with me to India, and then it would be there. Me, me, me. Qingyuan said, that's not good enough. Very direct response. And then he says, say more. How many times have you heard that in Dharma dialogues? We don't say that's not good enough because we're so kind in Boundless Way. But we often say more about that, because I can speak for myself. I'm really curious. And I think in putting my heart into Qingyuan's heart overnight, I became curious Say more. Shito answers, Master, you should say half of it and not depend completely on me. I can almost see the unraveling here of Shito. Oh, I don't know what to say. I've given it all. I haven't told you how wonderful I am and the emptiness thing and how great everything is. Why don't you say something? Sometimes, yeah, just you do it. You do it. I don't want to make any more mistakes. I don't want to be challenged anymore. Qingyuan says, I don't refuse to speak to you, but I'm afraid that after this, no one will be deeply awakened. There are a lot of phrases like this all through the koan literature where the teacher refuses to steal the student's treasure. If I said it to you, you would be ungrateful to me. This is yours to understand. And when someone does come to an understanding, they understand why the teacher doesn't explain everything. Although explaining can be helpful sometimes, it never hits the heart of the matter. And that's where Keizan came in and told me something important at this point. In his Taisho, where he's talking about this very thing, where he says, Shito says, Master, you should say half of it and not depend completely on me. Keizan says, meeting in this way and speaking in this way, if each just communicates a half, how can the whole thing be expressed? We understand there's no such thing as half. Every expression is 100%. Every statement, every mistake, every arrogant expression of awakening, every confusion is the whole thing. Nothing completes it. Already accomplished. So Keizan says this, how can the whole thing be expressed? Even if heaven and earth collapsed and the entirety was revealed alone, this would still be going halfway. And then he comments on Qingyuan saying, I don't refuse to speak to you, but I'm afraid that after this, no one will be deeply awakened. That's an interesting thing to say. In other translations, it's the lineage is going to die out. Because it has to be authentic. If it's half and half, if it's just me and then you, it's not the whole thing. And the only way that the lineage can maintain itself is for the student to develop the skill to be fully themselves. Not to be like the teacher, not to be like some other person they've read about or heard on a podcast. Everyone in this room is uniquely you. People listening to this recording sometime in the future also count uniquely yourself. There's no other way to be, but oh my goodness, don't we suffer trying to be something else. And here's the line that really got me. I think it got me to sleep. It was so reassuring. Keizan says, even if someone speaks of pain or speaks of bitterness, if that person doesn't experience pain deep in their bones or experience bitterness ripping apart their tongue, they ultimately cannot understand the reality of it. I'll read that again. Even if someone speaks of pain or speaks of bitterness, if that person doesn't experience pain deep in their bones or experience bitterness ripping apart their tongue, do you know what that feels like? I know what that feels like. Oh my goodness, being a human being is so difficult. All you have to do, you can look in your own heart and see it, but then look around. Not just at the people in the sendo, but the whole mess in the world. We know this now. It's getting hotter and hotter and hotter. The world may end in fire, which is a prediction of the Buddha. What if that happens? What will you do as you burn up? Can you feel that pain? Can you feel the bitterness? Keizan says he ultimately cannot understand the reality of it. And then Kaysan says, you cannot get it through words. And so when Shito says it's not that it won't exist, it's just that no one will be able to express it, still stuck in thinking that he can express it or it can be expressed or wherever he happens to be. What does the teacher do here? What does Qingyuan do? He's already got his hosu raised up in the air and he hits him with it. And as we heard, the hosu is gentle. If I actually struck somebody with the stick part of the hosu, it would probably break the thing. It's not that strong. If I hit you with my kotsu, though, that would be a different matter. So be careful, Endok-san. Qingyuan hit him with the hosu, and the master was greatly awakened. And then Kaizan's final words on this whole matter in his poem, with one raising of the hosu, he held up the totality of the way. Do you see that now? That the totality of the way is expressed continuously and in every action, sometimes in words, sometimes not in words. The totality of the way happens in one moment, in one breath, in one particle of experience. With one raising of the hosu, he held up the reality of the way. Never by so much as a hair did Shito ever deviate from it. Thank you. So please make yourselves comfortable and make your half circle. Have our Dharma dialogue. Who wants to go first? Rich?
So, thank you for the talk. I thought that was pretty good for 1 hour's sleep.
For what? For 1 hour's
sleep?
Yeah.
But I just have a question about the language, especially the way Shito talks. We wouldn't express ourselves that way, but somehow people came to use these metaphors or whatever. I'm just wondering how that happened, because it's so foreign. I don't know.
People do express themselves that way right now in the 21st century. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But if it's foreign to you, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think maybe just...
Yeah, I'm not saying it. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me finish. I don't think it's a bad thing, but I think it's worth, if you happen to be working on this koan, and we all sort of are now, take one piece of it and make it yours. How would you say it? And that's the way to find the entry into these books.
Thank you. And we also might say that about a poem. Mm-hmm. You read a poem, you say, nobody really talks like that. These are, in some ways, condensations of meaning. It is a literary tradition that comes from an oral tradition. So in these words, they are sometimes condensed, but also words come in different ways at different times.
Yeah. And I do really experience, when people kind of get past telling the story of themselves, then words become very different, in Doksan at least. You know, just like, I'm amazed by what people come up with. It is like poetry sometimes. It's very evocative, and it could be a koan, right? These dialogues. So, but it is, you have to kind of get through the narrative form of explaining yourself. And so, yeah, I love what David Roshi just said, you know, that poetry like that. I went out to the Hazelwood because a fire was in my head. Who talks like that? Right. But boy, does it spoke right to me. Yeah. So let what speaks to you speak to you, and what doesn't speak to you, either work with it or just drop it. Find something that speaks to you. Start there.
Right.
Yeah, Anne.
Well, I realize how hard it is to trust my own thinking when I hear a poem. When I first heard that several days ago, I kept thinking, that sounds like the arrogance of a certain stage in life. Mm-hmm. My arrogance. But then I thought, no, a Cheeto can't be arrogant. I must not be seeing it correctly. And then put it back into something I know, a stage of life I know, was really nice. So thank you very much.
That's a great example of what you're talking about. You can lean back. I love what you did with your body there. you came forward and then you leaned back. That's what we do. I don't care. This is a way to explain it. But then it just keeps getting richer, almost like when you've released the tension around, I don't get it. Oh, I get it. And then you get more and more and more. Will?
Thank you for the talk. Also think that was wonderful. I'm so glad we got to the middle.
It was for you.
It's so interesting all the way through. I guess my question is, I'm not even sure if it's a question. I'm interested in the penultimate bit. That is to say, when he says, I don't refuse to speak, my first thought was, why does he say that? Because you could say, I refuse to speak. But maybe he's just commenting what he is actually doing in that moment. Here I am speaking to you. This is my concession to your desire that I participate. But then when he says, I'm afraid, the lineage will end, that's essentially saying, as I understand it, the same thing as, but you're not there. It's not good enough, right? My first thought was, oh, he has the secret, and he could deliver it, but that didn't make sense, right? So he's saying, if I just keep talking and you think I've done half of it, then nothing, we haven't seen what we need to see. His response is, what does he say? He says, no one could express it. And in a way, I feel like he's right, but the problem is he's saying it. If no one can express it, he shouldn't even say that.
I'm just going to stop you for a moment because I know that either Michael or Alan has something to say to you in response about this. I just don't know which one.
the whole time you're talking, I'm hearing this one beautiful koan that we have in our miscellaneous collection. Say something without moving your lips or tongue.
Yeah.
It's for me, the teacher is not. It can't not say it. Just in their presence, and so there's always something being said, and so. That he's just expressing that in that way, for me. I know Alan might have another.
Well, just that I think Cheeto knows already what's being said to him. He knows this perfectly well. That if the teacher says it, that he loses this great opportunity. And so it's just like it's a preliminary touch. I'm not going to do this for you. It's interesting that he says, I'm not refusing to do it for you, but is that really what you want? And of course, he doesn't.
And the response, it can't express it. It wouldn't be expressed. What is the line?
He's trying, right? He's saying, in one version, understanding is not improbable. But
I meant Cheeto's response.
But yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Okay, yeah.
That's what he says.
Understanding is not improbable, but there would be no one to speak it, or something like that. He's still not quite able to pull it out of himself. He can't put it into words. And it turns out that it doesn't need to be put into words.
Yeah. Well, and in one way he's saying, I really get it, I just can't express it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He sort of you know, backing away a little bit. Oh yeah, I have true understanding. It's just hard to express. You know? I think when you bring up the subtlety of all this, it's not like, you know, Jenny's lovely image of the Zen decoder ring. You know, it's not like the teacher's withholding anything, right? So, you know, on the causal level, you think, oh, well, the teacher could really say something, but it's not like that. It doesn't come like that.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank
you.
That's great. Yes, Paul.
Thank you, Melissa, for the talk, and I appreciate the perspective, the shift in the sense that it was always there, but seeing it more through Chin Yuan's, the teacher's perspective, actually allowed me to see Shito much clearer, which maybe sounds strange, but it just seems so clear. And I was really struck by something that Todd had shared yesterday as far as about that the student has skills as well. And so what I so love about Shito in this case is that he's just willing to come forward. You know, it is that hot shot. You know, something that Bix had said last week. And there is this kind of, you know, the arrogance is lovely. And I think it's like, at one level, it can be shut down. But instead, Chin Yuan's like, yeah, come on. Let's, you know, it's not like, yeah, get more arrogant. But, yeah, keep going. And I think that really is a skill of a student, to just keep showing up, even when he's potentially hit that wall, mm-hmm. and he's still willing to go ahead and to show up.
I love that perspective too, because arrogance could sound like a problem. We've got to refine this person. He's, you know, just shut up already. But no, there's something underneath the arrogance that's the spirit of the Dharma.
Right.
And so Chin Yuan must see that when he looks at him, you know, when he's in the room with him. There's a trust there that whatever people bring in is an ingredient that contributes to awakening. It's not a problem that needs to be gotten rid of. That's so important. And so many stories about arrogant Zen students, because I think there are a lot of, you know, arrogant Zen students, but also people who give up. One of my favorite stories is the guy who just says, he keeps going into his teacher. Do you know who I'm talking about? I can't remember his name. But anyway, he just keeps going back, and the teacher gives him, nope. Finally, he gives up. And he goes to tend the grave of a teacher, and he's sweeping one day, and he knocks a stone onto a bamboo, and tock, just like the Han sound, and it just opens him up. But he gave up. He stopped encountering the teacher. And then, of course, he rushes back to the teacher. And comes up with all these poems. There you have it. Thank you. Bix?
Yeah, so Paul actually kind of touched on what I was, you know, for context, last week in Dharma Dialogue, I kind of spoke about this, like, part of myself, like the, like, hot shots and speaking of that, like, they, you know, they're really doing it, you know what I mean? And I guess, like, I can just, yeah, like, I can totally relate to that area, and so, like, I'll be sitting and be like, oh, yeah, I know this call. Like, I got it. Going, nope. Shit. I really thought I had it. And, yeah, I mean, that it sucks, but it's so important and helpful at the same time. Yeah.
Yeah, beyond good and evil, we think, you know, this is not about refining ourselves in some way. It's more like using, as Melissa was saying, whatever you got, that's your resource. And your great, you know, inflation or your great deflation. You know, I'm not up to it, you know. That's the entry point. And that everything is useful, and our miserable karma becomes our wonderful dharma, right? Just that.
So with that, you did get it. Just the answer wasn't what the teacher was looking for.
Hmm.
There's also the fact that, you know, in this case, Qinglong doesn't ring any bell. And that goes to something Melissa said, which is Qinglong knows that. Shito's just like trembling. It's like when a drop is, you know, almost dropping and not quite an almost. Yeah. And you can see it changing form. And just one touch and it drops. So I love that dynamic in this koan, that something is, you know, the bird's about to, the caterpillar is about to become the moth, and is just on that edge. It adds to the dramatic feeling for me of this koan.
Thank you. Esther.
There's some thread this week around that we don't really know what it is we hear and how we perceive it and respond. So, but I'll try to express some of what I heard. That I think what I heard, this other aspect of the arrogance, or what seems to be embedded in this stuck in emptiness, and how the teacher meets that with some compassion. So allowing room for being stuck in emptiness. Can you hear me, Paul?
Now,
okay.
Better.
And lets him sort of linger like a white butterfly above the bush a little bit. And then at some point, enough already, hosus. Like there's something about both allowing that there's the basking in emptiness, and I have a feeling that we as human beings bask in emptiness or basking form more, perhaps gravitating toward one or the other, but the teacher meets it, allows it, and lets the student find their way with support, but not whacking the student right away into necessarily going into that position. So helpful when we are with other human beings and with ourselves, this allowing rather than judgment, and I'll be for it. Don't be that. Am I making
yes,
kind of
so much? And I think this relates a little bit to what Alan was saying, that there's a wonderful line in the transmission ceremony. You know, when we give transmission to another person to become a teacher, that this is a moment trembling with possibility. Always gets me. It feels so evocative, right? And so in this case, the person, Shito, is really only like a little blow, right? Is going to, a little tiny breath of air would knock him over into realization, which is what happens in this case. And there's something important that I didn't say, but I didn't think of it until you pointed to it. So there's people who are stuck in emptiness, and then there are people who are stuck in an idea of emptiness, which is a totally different thing. Coming, everything is one, and isn't that great? And yeah, there's a koan about that too, where somebody comes in and says, everything is one, quoting a poet. And isn't that wonderful? Isn't that the best thing you ever heard? And the teacher takes them out to the garden and points to a flower and says, people these days see that flower as though they were in a dream. Right? So that there's a discernment. If somebody's in that place, then the pointing out is different. Right? And so the teacher, there's no, you know, in the How to Be a Zen Teacher rule book, that particular part is not delineated. I'm kidding, there's no rule book. It's a decoder ring. This is to sense from my own experience, is this person being authentic? And people can appear arrogant from both positions. And sometimes can say, well, I know all about this. I've studied it. I've done so many podcasts. You know, let me tell you about this guy I heard on the internet the other day. And it's just blah, 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 blah. Nothing. I'm going to start carrying my hosu around more. but that's a different kind of stop and refocus. Right, but if somebody's really ripe, that's very different. There's a felt sense that all their words are pointing to something, and I think that's what's happening in this koan. That Shito's so close, like Alan was saying, and Qinglong really feels that. and who else? Especially as the session goes on, if you've been a little reluctant to talk, this would be a good time. You don't have to, but everyone in here is equally valuable. Okay, thank you all, and let's put the Zendo back together.